We're continuing our study of history and geography of the Bible, and we've reached the portion in our study where we're talking about the period of the divided kingdom. And that's not the right chart. Here's the one I want. The period of the divided kingdom as King Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, takes over the throne of national Israel. We have studied in our study Wednesday night from chapter 12 and noted that Rehoboam is approached with a request from the people. John, would you tell me what their request was, please? All right, to lighten the their labors. And how did Rehoboam respond? Carolyn?
He asked for advice from the elders in his family, his father. And they said, if you do that, they'll be forever if you serve them as well. And he was so much like that. I suppose it's like that. Under the Bible, the young men. And they said,
show them who's the boss. And so what did he do? Showed them who's boss. And what was their response to that, Bruce? All right. Well, we find that the people rebelled. They would not follow the leadership of King Rehoboam, and so they brought back King Jeroboam, who had fled from Solomon down to Egypt, and Jeroboam came back and was appointed to be the king of the northern 10 tribes. Now, was this a fulfillment of prophecy? Yes. We noted how that it was told unto Rehoboam that they, or to Solomon, that the kingdom would be taken from him because of his marriage to all of the foreign women and his alliances that he had made in marriage with the king of Egypt. And consequently, the kingdom would be divided. We read about that in the 11th chapter and in verse 11. But God said he would not do that during the lifetime of King Solomon, but rather it would occur during the lifetime of his son Rehoboam. And so the things that we're reading now are indeed a result of that. Now, when Rehoboam realizes that the northern 10 tribes have rebelled, he attempts to formulate an army to force their subjection. And we look in verse 21 of chapter 12, where Rehoboam came to Jerusalem, and he assembled the house of Judah, it says, and the tribe of Benjamin, 144,000 chosen men, 80,000 men. And he's going to force subjection of the northern 10 tribes. Does he follow through with that? Why? Lord told him not to. This was the result of the judgment of God upon Israel as a result of the decision that King Solomon had made to form all these marriages and alliances with various nations round about them. Well, as we see that Jeroboam is now made king and the kingdom divides, Jeroboam decides that it's just too much for you to go up to the city of Jerusalem to worship God there. So what does he propose? Noah, what does Jeroboam propose? You remember? That's all right. That's all right. Somebody help me out. What does Jeroboam suppose propose? All right. We're going to have an altar built in Bethel or Bethel and one in Dan. And you'll go there and worship. Now, what does he erect at these places? Golden calves. Where'd that come from? Egypt. That's where he's been for so long. And, of course, we see that evidenced in the history of Israel as they first came up out of the land of Egypt. They proposed while Moses is upon the mountain receiving the commandments that Aaron build for them a golden calf or calves, I think we saw in that instance, gods, plural, a golden calf for the gods that brought them up out of the land of Egypt. And so here we see then introduced, and get to the charts that I want to look at this morning, we see this introduced and fulfilled then as a prophecy of Ahijah, as Ahijah had spoken unto Jeroboam when he came up out of Egypt upon learning of the death of King Solomon, that he would rule over 10 of the tribes of Israel, and 2, Benjamin and Judah, would be left under the control of Rehoboam. Now, Rehoboam was of the tribe of Judah. They continued to carry the name of Judah. He kept control of the temple, the palace, and the capital city, the city of Jerusalem. Now, this, of course, is just a little brief review of some of the things that we discussed in our Wednesday night class. This division between Israel and Judah as such, the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes, this has been brewing for some time, has it not? As we go back to the days of Judges, we saw that Ephraim showed resentment even during the days of Gideon and the conquering of the Midianites. Benjamin chose to fight rather than to submit to the other tribes during the days of the Judges in Judges chapter 10 or chapter 19 and 20. And then, of course, the northern 10 tribes, when David was to be brought back over the Jordan River into the city of Jerusalem after the rebellion of his son Absalom, we saw that the northern 10 tribes resented the attitude of the kingdom of Judah when they went and brought David back to his place. So this is not a new thing, is it? It's something that's been brewing for some time, but now the wedge is driven as we now have 2 kingdoms and 2 line of kings and essentially 2 lines of prophets for these. And so jealousy has become rampant between the two, and wars began to ensue between the kingdom of Jeroboam and the kingdom of Rehoboam. This approximates the line of division between the two kingdoms. Now, both kingdoms, God said, would be blessed if they did what? If they remained faithful. I find it interesting, and of course, when we think about the realm of providence, I don't know how this would all have played out, but we do know that it would have played out because God promised that it would. But if you go back to the 11th chapter of 1 Kings and pick up the reading there at verse 8, God is speaking to Jeroboam. And he says, "It shall come to pass, or it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and wilt walk in my ways, and do that which is right in mine eyes, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and I will build thee a sure house, as I built for David, and I will give Israel unto thee. And I will for this afflict the seed of David, but not forever. Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt. And Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon." Jeroboam has an opportunity that he does not take advantage of. He could be blessed. We know that a dynasty could have been established from the lineage of Jeroboam. But does Jeroboam establish essentially really any kind of dynasty? What happened? Well, you may say we'll get to that. And we will. Pardon me? All right, Jeroboam got into idolatry, but what happened to his dynasty? It was killed. That's right. His son was killed. And that ended the lineage of Jeroboam. But the fact is that neither kingdom remained faithful to God for a lengthy period of time. When we look at Jeroboam in 1 Kings chapter 14, beginning in verse 7, 1 Kings 14 verse 7, the text tells us, "Go tell Jeroboam, thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, for as much as I exalted thee from among the people and made thee prince over my people Israel and rent the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to thee, yet thou hast not been as my servant David, who kept my commandment and who followed me with all his heart to do only that which was right in mine eyes, but hast done evil above all that were before thee, and hast gone and made thee other gods and molten images to provoke me to anger, and hast cast me behind thy back. Therefore, behold, I will bring evil upon the house of Jeroboam, and will cut off from Jeroboam every man-child, him that is shut up, and him that is left at large in Israel, and will utterly sweep away the house of Jeroboam, as a man sweepeth away dung, till it be all gone." I want you to look carefully at that, because what is God saying to Jeroboam? Your seed is going to be cut off. And indeed it was. Look, if you will, at the text following here in chapter 14. It says in verse 11, "Him that dieth of Jeroboam in the city shall the dogs eat, and him that dieth in the field shall the birds of the heavens eat, for Jehovah hath spoken it. Arise thou therefore, and get thee to thy house, and when thy feet enter into the city, the child shall die." Somebody set the stage for me. In what context is this conversation taking place? Jeroboam and his wife have a child. What's wrong with the child? Born sick, that's right. And Jeroboam sends his wife to the prophet Ahijah. And Ahijah is to tell Jeroboam's wife what's about to happen to the child. And what does he tell her will happen to the child? Well, he's going to die, but when? When you go home, the child will be dead. So in other words, when you set foot in your house, the child will die. And look, if you will, at the text, beginning in verse 14, it says, "Moreover, Jehovah will raise him up a king over Israel, who shall cut off the house of Jeroboam that day. For what even now? For Jehovah will smite Israel as a reed is shaken in the water, and he will root up Israel out of this good land." Hold that thought. We're going to come back to it. "Which he gave to their fathers, and will scatter them beyond the river, because they have made their Asherim, provoking Jehovah to anger. And he will give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he hath sinned, and wherewith he hath made Israel to sin. And Jeroboam's wife arose and departed and came to Tirzah. And as she came to the threshold of the house, the child died. And all Israel buried him and mourned for him according to the word of Jehovah, which he spake by his servant Ahijah the prophet." We know that his son Nadab reigned in his stead. What happened to Nadab? He was killed. Now, when God said, "I'm going to cut off your house," that's what he intended to do. There would not be a dynasty established with the house of Jeroboam, but rather, when we look at the reign of King Jeroboam and the evil that he introduced among God's people, this became a comparative benchmark to all of the kings as it pertains to the degree of evil that they participated in, whether it was better or worse than that of Jeroboam. And I want us to make note of that. But what about Rehoboam? We say Rehoboam was the son of Solomon. Rehoboam was of the lineage of the kings of Judah, the lineage of David. And so we'd like to think that Rehoboam and his descendants would be faithful, right? You might like to think that. But if you'll drop down in the text to chapter 14, beginning at verse 21, it says that Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which Jehovah had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. And his mother's name was Naamah, the Ammonitess, And Judah did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins which they committed above all that their fathers did. And they also built them high places and pillars and Asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there were also Sodomites in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations which Jehovah drove out before the children of Israel. And we learn then that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. I want to hold that thought. Two or three things we want to discuss before we pursue that. One is, you'll note in verse 15, God said, I will smite Israel as a reed is shaken in the water, and he will root up Israel out of this good land which he gave to their fathers. How many times they've been warned about that? Countless times. Now, these are in the list of passages I've asked you to remember. When we go back to the days of Moses, Moses warned them when he brought them up out of the land of Egypt and told them exactly what was going to happen to them. I need some passages. Where are they? Deuteronomy 4, 8, and chapters 28 through 30. That's right. Upon the death of Moses, Joshua prepares to bring them into the promised land. We see that the promised land is conquered in Joshua chapter 11. And Joshua then begins to divide the land among the tribes of Israel. And as Joshua completes that task, he tells them that God has given you the land which he swore unto their fathers. You have possessed the land. You've dwelt in it. I need a passage. All right, anyone? 43 through 45. Joshua 21, 43 through 45. Then that brings us to the second time that Joshua tells them that. Where does he tell them? God has given you the land. Not one thing has failed. But if you worship other gods, here's what he'll do to you. Where do we read it? 23, beginning in verse 14. That's right, 23, beginning in verse 14. Joshua tells them, Moses has told them repeatedly. Now we see that God is telling them during the days of the kings, when the kings are first beginning to depart and introduce idolatrous practices among the people of God. It's going to cost you. It's going to cost you the land. You'll be carried away captive and the land will belong to somebody else. Now, Jeroboam was afraid he would lose control of his kingdom, but Ahijah had promised it would be his if he would be faithful. But the problem, you see, Jeroboam was not faithful. He introduced these idolatrous practices and consequences then began to ensue. Now, when King Jeroboam set up these golden calves, one in Dan and one in Bethel, his reasoning was, it's too much for you to go to Jerusalem. Now, we've noted that Jerusalem is just barely over the line into the city or into the region of Judah, and Bethel is right on the southern border of the northern kingdom. So telling them it's too much for you to go down there, that really wasn't his concern, was it? What was his concern? All right, they would revolt. He would lose his power. He would lose his position as king. And so he tells them it's too much for you to do that. Now, not only has he changed the place of worship, but what all has he changed? Pardon me? Well, yes, he's brought in idols, the calves, so he's changed the object of worship. No longer worshiping God, he's changed the place of worship. No longer in Jerusalem, what else has he changed? The priesthood. He's ordered a whole new priesthood to serve in this capacity. And as he participates in that, we see that consequences certainly were to follow. We saw that when he inaugurated this whole new system of worship, Jeroboam's son was murdered, and his family completely wiped out. And if you'll turn over to the 15th chapter of 1 Kings, begin the reading there about verse 16. Randy, if you don't mind to read some for me. 1 Kings 15, beginning at verse 16. And read through the next few verses, please. All right, let's pause right there in the reading. What we're seeing is Asa, who is the king of Judah, making an alliance with Ben-Hadad or Ben-Hadad. And as we read of that alliance, Ben-Hadad begins to support Asa instead of the king of Judah. But who is then the king of Judah? I'm sorry, Israel. Baasha, the next king. You'll note, not the next king, but verse 25 is the passage I'm looking for, chapter 15, verse 25. And Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to rule over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned over Israel 2 years, and he did that which is evil in the sight of Jehovah, and walked in the way of his father, and in the sin wherewith he had made Israel to sin. And Baasha, the son of Ahijah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. And Baasha smote him at Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, for Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibbethon. Even in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, did Baasha slay him and reigned in his stead. And it came to pass that as soon as he was king, he smote all the house of Jeroboam and left not to Jeroboam any that breathed until he had destroyed them, according to the saying of Jehovah, which he spake by his servant Ahijah, the Silonite, for the sins of Jeroboam which he sinned, and wherewith he made Israel to sin, because of his provocation, therewith he provoked Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger. The point I want you to see is that the house of Jeroboam was indeed cut off, consistent with the words of the prophet, that his dynasty would most certainly end. Now, in our study last time, I don't recall precisely if we talked at much length about this young prophet. I think that we talked about him some, but we note that the young prophet, when Jeroboam had set up these idolatrous places of worship, one in Dan and one in Bethel, was sent to cry out against the altar that Jeroboam had set up in Bethel. When the young prophet went to Bethel and cried out against that altar, we see that Jeroboam responded in what way? Wanting him to be arrested. What happened to Jeroboam? What happened after that? Couldn't do it, could he? Why not? I can't do that. Can't go have dinner with the king. But then there was an old prophet who learned what the young prophet did. And he sent word for the young prophet to come and dine with him. What did the young prophet say, Judy? You remember? All right. Yeah. But the old prophet lied to him. Now, when the young prophet went back and ate, he didn't make it home. because he had disobeyed the commandment of God. And I find it ironic that the old prophet was the instrument through which this was communicated to the young prophet, that you will be killed, you'll not make it home because you disobeyed the commandment of God. Now, an interesting note just there is this young prophet no doubt has learned that God meant what he said, and that the message that God had said to him was the last communication of God on this matter, that God had not communicated to this old prophet. And no doubt the young prophet understands now that there are consequences to disobedience even when it seems right to me. What was it that the wisdom writer said about things that seem right? Leads to death. And where does it say that? Uh-huh. 14:12 and 16:25. That's right. Yes, David? Well, he did indeed. And I don't know what God did to the old prophet, except he had to live with what he did. It is indeed. Yes, it is indeed. And the old prophet lied, and no doubt there were consequences imposed upon the old prophet. If not temporal, they were eternal, but he had to live with what he did. We know that he did go and get the young prophet. He buried him in his own burial place and ordered that when he died that his bones be laid beside the bones of the young prophet. He was very honorable in that regard. But the events that transpired with the young prophet were the result of what this old prophet did. Well, yeah, but this old prophet was a liar. And that in itself defeats wisdom. He was a liar. And he wanted what he wanted, and that's just the way that he got it. He got his way, but it cost the life of that young prophet. So it was severe consequences. Yeah. Well, comment on that. You know, when we're studying in 1 Kings chapter 13 and 14 regarding the reigns of King Jeroboam and King Rehoboam and the setting up of the altar in Dan and Bethel and the reference to the young prophet. But what we want to note here is age is not the determining factor of wisdom. Well, there are some young men that are very much wise well beyond their years. And there are some old men that are just old fools. And I think what we see here is an example of that. Here was an old prophet that was a liar. Just because he was old didn't make him worthy of being reverenced. And so we want to take careful note of that. You know, there are those, I think, David, that will follow what an old preacher says, because he's an old preacher. Therefore, he's got to be right. But how many have been led astray by an old preacher? Yeah. And how many refute what this young man says? In fact, when I first started preaching, someone told me that when I got a little bit older, I would see that different. Now, I'll grant you that in growing older and studying and so forth, I've had to change what I believe about some things. But it wasn't the result of getting older. It was the result of further study that caused me to change some of the things that I now believe. But the particular item that this older gentleman was telling me that As I got older, I would change my views on that. I have not. What I believed then is what I believe now. And the more that I've studied that has simply confirmed that what I believed then was true, you see. So there are young men that may be wise, and there are old men that may be fools. Age is generally something that accompanies, or wisdom is something that generally accompanies growing older. But we might look at that as a proverb. That's not an absolute. Here's an old man that was not wise. He was very foolish. And so we want to take note of that in our study. Yes, Randy? Well, yeah. But what should that old prophet have known? Yeah, I'm a prophet too, and I understand authority. You do what God told you. Indicates selfish motives, whatever they were. Indicates selfish motives, that's right. He could have told him, go on your way. And we can speculate about what his motives were, but we can be certain they were selfish motives. They were not honorable. If it had been honorable, he would have respected the words of the young prophet and sent him on his way. Well, when we look at the map as we have, we see that gradually the Levites and others who were faithful in the northern 10 tribes move into the southern kingdom of Judah. So as far as population and so forth is concerned, they pretty much became equals. But this period of division was a horrible time in the history of these people. It lasted about 200 years. And I've asked you to read and read very carefully the text in your lesson book there, beginning on page 99. And continue to study through the charts. And if you don't have a lesson book, bring that to my attention. I want you to have a lesson book, especially as we study this period of the kings. Now, what I've done with my lesson book, you do with yours what you desire. It's your book. But I've taken the pages out where I could put them in a three-ring binder because there are other notes and so forth that I want to put in with the period of these various kings. But you'll see it turn sideways on the page. Look at your page number 102. Page number 102. I want you to be identified with how these charts are laid out so they'll be useful for you. Please feel free to make notes on the charts because it's to be helpful to you. You'll notice the passages that you are to read beside the man's name. Over here to the left is the name Rehoboam. Next to him is the man Jeroboam. You'll also note that following down the side of the page, there should be dates, but the side of Abijam, you're looking at about 908 B.C. I have written that in. I don't know if that's incorrect or if it's just omitted on the chart that you have, but it's about 908 B.C. But following down beneath the name of the king, you'll see a number of things that that particular king did, what he was noted for. You'll also notice the prophets. You see that over on the right-hand side of the page? And again, if you don't have a lesson book, make that known to me. I want you to be familiar with this. You'll see the names of the prophets that spoke to the people of God during this time of the divided kingdom. On the extreme right-hand side of the chart, you will notice the enemy kings. The reason why that's so important is, as we study about the people of God, we need to see the backdrop against which they are living. Some of the things that are going on in the nations round about them, contemporary with the reign of this king or this king or this king, influences the people of God. And what we see during that period is that though the people of God live in their own land, they're not isolated from the influence of the world. And neither are we. The people of God do not live in a bubble. And often the things that people in the society round about us do bleed over among God's people, and we find ourselves tempted or even practicing the very same things. And one of the things that God's people frequently forgot, in fact, the northern kingdom completely forgot, was that they were to be a peculiar people, different from those round about them. But we see this trend beginning when they began to want to have kings like the nations round about them. And Samuel told them what that would mean. What he did not tell them in his listing of problems was that they will lead you to worship idols, because that's what the nations round about you do. Now, when you study the period of the kings, you be aware of that and watch for that. One other thing I would call to your attention as you study from these charts: look carefully at the parallel accounts. Because as you study from the Kings and the Chronicles, studying with the assistance of these charts will help you to keep names straight. I know that becomes an ongoing problem because some of the names are not identical for the same character when you're reading from the account of the Kings and the account of the Chronicles. For example, when you're reading in the account of the Kings, for example, in 1 Kings chapter 15, 1 Kings chapter 15, you will note in verse 1, it says, "In the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, began Abijam to reign over Judah." Now that identifies that Abijam is king in Judah. If you're following the parallel account of that in the Chronicles, you'll find that in 2 Chronicles chapter 12 in verse 16, where Abijam is called Abijah. Now is that going to throw you for a loop? It can. So read some of the details about what that king does. So though you're noticing a name that may be slightly different, it's not necessarily meaning a different man. It may be the same man, just identified by a different name. And so the charts that you have of the kings will help you with that. And as you notice that in your reading, make notes. Make notes in your Bible. For example, in 1 Kings 15, where it says Abijam, right out to the side, Abijah, 2 Chronicles 12, 16. So you'll know that when you're reading the Chronicles account, this is what that man is called. I don't know. Anything else you want to know? Okay. It's confusing, but it's not impossible for us to follow. I can't help myself. I've just got to jump ahead and show you this. Because this exists, and it's going to throw some of us. I know it just will. It's done it before. And if you're not studying carefully, making notes, it's easy to mess up. When we follow the line of the kings in Judah, of course, between David and Jehoshaphat, there are a number of kings, but we come down from Jehoshaphat to this man named Jehoram. Now, here are the kings in Israel. We know that Jeroboam is way up here, and a lot of kings and so forth that we have omitted here, but we've got Omri, and then King Ahab, a very reputable king in our memory, I'm sure, as we talk about the wickedness of King Ahab, who was married, by the way, to Jezebel. So that pegs us on Ahab. But notice that Ahab had a son by the name of Jehoram. Jehoshaphat had a son by the name of Jehoram. Not the same man. Not the same lineage. Jehoram married Athaliah, and there's all kinds of interesting things we'll talk about there. Athaliah's brother was Jehoram. Athaliah's husband was Jehoram. You think that part's going to get confusing? Well, Athaliah and Jehoram had a son. His name was Ahaziah. But Athaliah and her brother Jehoram have a brother whose name is Ahaziah. Maggie, you're shaking your head just like somebody else I know. I'll never get that straight. Yeah, you will, because you've got this chart in your book. It's going to help you with that. And I forget what page it's on, but it's in your book, and it'll help you with that. Athaliah decided that she wanted to rule the kingdom of Judah. And so she seeks out all her children and kills them, except one, Joash. Joash was preserved by the high priest. His life was spared. And Athaliah eventually was killed, and Joash became king, restoring the lineage of the kings of David. Now, this chart is put together not just to confuse you, that's not the purpose of it, but it illustrates what we're talking about. So hopefully you, knowing this going in, you'll work with these names and make notes in the text where you're reading who this man is. So when you come across this man's name in the text, you're obviously going to ask a question. Is this man's name, does that represent a king in Judah, or does it represent a king in Israel? Now, when you're studying the history of nations, it's powerfully important you know who that man is, isn't it? And when you read about Ahaziah, are you reading about a king in Judah, or are you reading about the brother of Jehoram over here, who was not a king in Judah? Okay, so you want to keep that straight. And this chart will help you to do that. So I bring that to your attention so that you'll know to look for those as you're studying. All right, let me drop back down here now to where I was, and we'll pick that up for just a moment before we're out of time. Now, this divided kingdom period, we said it lasted for about 200 years. Out of the 39 kings in the two kingdoms, 13 were murdered by their own people. 5 more were taken prisoners by their enemies. That don't suggest to you a very pretty picture, does it? But it does represent to you some of the turmoil that existed during this period of the divided kingdom. The welfare of the kings and their kingdoms was directly related to their service to God. What was it that God had recorded? He had told them numerous times, you be faithful to me and what will happen? I'll bless you. You start worshiping idols and what will happen? You'll be cursed. Now that's exactly so. Now, the Israelites kept very detailed historical records of their kings. We don't have all of that. But what we do have is their religious history recorded upon the pages of the Old Testament. Now again, in the reading of the kings and the chronicles, how many times a king prospered because he served God, or a king suffered because he turned his back on God? We want to look in our study, in our reading of the text, we want to look for these expressions. This happened why? Because this man disobeyed the commandments of God. And we'll see that stated repeatedly. Because he worshipped idols. This is what happened to him. And we'll see other kings who were rewarded, and the reason is stated. Because he obeyed the commandments of God. In the southern kingdom, we'll see the same thing. The kings were direct descendants of David through Solomon. And of course, this became the fulfillment of 2 Samuel, or a part of the fulfillment of 2 Samuel chapter 7. You remember when we were studying from 2 Samuel chapter 7, and we noted that God said through Nathan that the house of David would be established. And what we noted there was that he's talking about the lineage of kings from David, that this would be established ultimately in whom? In the coming of Christ. In the coming of Christ. That Jesus would be of the lineage of David, and God would exalt him on his own right hand. And we saw David record those words in Psalms chapter 110, beginning in verse 1. All right. Oh, yes. Interesting note. There were some good kings in Judah. But out of all of the kings, from Jeroboam forward, all of the kings of the northern 10 tribes, not one good king. Okay? Out of time? We'll start with that next time. Please read the text, and please study from your charts. There's interesting information on there, I think, that will be especially helpful in your reading to keep things straight, keep the names straight, and that will be helpful to you.